This recording is about the former township of Yallourn and the State Electricity Commission's Yallourn Powerworks. For this project, 20 audio interviews were conducted with people connected to Yallourn, and the following excerpts are from their recollections. This Yallourn project is produced by Old Gippstown at Mowi in Victoria, Australia. It acknowledges the Gunai Kurnai continuing ownership of this land and the authority they have never surrendered.
Welcome back to your lawn. May a smile or a word bring your memory delight. Welcome back to your lawn.
Hello, my name is Julie Fenley, and welcome to Industrialisation and Social Change in Gippsland. This audio looks at the memories of power industry workers and their families from the Yallourn coal mine and electricity plant, which officially opened in 1921, and the model town of the same name. It also includes anecdotes from the life of Dr. James Moore Andrew, the township's first medical officer. Coming up are some stories about healthcare at Yallourn.
And it was interesting working at the hospital as a student nurse, because most of the patients that you were looking after, you either knew them, knew their relatives, knew their neighbour, or knew somebody that was doing an apprenticeship. So it was more or less like treating family.
That was Margaret, a retired nurse who started work at the Yallourn Hospital in 1965. This hospital provided a vital service at Yallourn, and particularly to those working for the State Electricity Commission at the Yallourn Open Cut Brown Coal Mine and Power Station. These employees worked in a hazardous industry. It was vital they received the best healthcare.
Workshops was, oh, I wish they had given me ear protection. I do. It was back in the old days, you know. Well, you'd use a grinder, you wouldn't have safety glasses. It was crazy. And you know, I'd get steel in my eye and have to go up to the health centre to get it put picked down.
That was former worker Murray telling me about more commonplace incidents at the power station workshops. In a series of interviews with former Powerworks employees and their families, I heard many stories like this. Other, more serious workplace accidents also occurred across the State Electricity Commission's operation. Jim McAllister told me about an accident which took place when his father fell from a coal conveyancer, or what is known as a telfer.
My father had fell off the telfer down at the Yallourn Power Station, and he broke both his hips and legs, like, you know, and he found it very hard to get around. He was always on crutches or a wheelchair.
James McAllister's father survived his fall, but never fully regained movement in his legs. Fortunately, the State Electricity Commission, or SEC, had one of the earliest medical contributory schemes in Australia. This provided health care for workers and their families. The Yallourn Medical and Hospital Society Benefit Scheme was set up in the early 1920s, and the hospital was officially opened in 1929 by Sir John Monash. Before that, the SEC had appointed a Melbourne University graduate and ducks of his year to work from consulting rooms at home and then at a health centre. His name was Dr. James Moore Andrew. He served the local Yallourn community for the next 46 years until his death in 1972. Today, this medical practitioner's equipment, personal effects, documents and certificates, and some of the Andrew family's precious household items can be seen at Old Gippstown.
Auntie Marg died last August. She was the one who told us a lot of the stories. How he'd walked, you know, he waded across a river with his doctor's bag over his shoulder to get to the other side to treat a patient. How he'd, you know, his car might have got, his car broke down sometimes, and he'd go out all hours of the night. He made no distinction. If a patient needed him, I got the feeling that he went.
Dr. Andrew and the medical team who joined him in later years at Yallourn didn't just treat Power Works employees. As Catherine Jerome, the granddaughter of Dr. Andrew, just shared, they treated a number of patients who were all covered under the medical scheme. Here is Murray again.
He was a big fella in his day, and well built but strong. Wore glasses. He was imposing, had a strong voice. I think he was caring, but he was not aloof, but he had rare respect, you know. He was pretty special.
Joan Briscoe also told me a story about her experience in the Yallourn Hospital after giving birth.
And every morning, Dr. Andrew would arrive between 6 and 6:30, booming down the corridors, waking everybody up, and we had words to say to him about waking us up early every morning. And he said, "What? The day's already started." But I'll never forget that big voice of his.
Peter Gray also shared his experiences as a young child, and Lucy Bathurst talked about giving birth.
I'm pretty sure when I was 5 years of age, I had tonsils out, and my twin had exactly the same. So I remember being in hospital, and the children's ward was an open ward, and he was in a bed across from me, and we were talking and waving to each other. And I can still remember being wheeled into the operating theatre, and he put a net over my face, a little net which to the average person looks like a sieve you have in your kitchen for sieving flour. I put that over my net and dripped the anaesthetic on top. It didn't smell very nice, and I said, "Doctor, I don't like it." And he goes, "Blow it away." I went, "Oh, okay." So I went, took a big deep breath, went to blow it away, and of course that knocked me out. So.
And when Denise was born, she was born at the Yallourn Hospital, and so was Judy. But Denise was only 2.5 pounds when she was born, and Dr. Andrew was wonderful with her. He never left her. He sat with her all night. And, you know, he was just wonderful. I'll never forget how good he was. If it hadn't been for him, she might have made it.
One little thing I often recall, even when he was down the street, people would come up, "Oh, I've got something in my eye, a bit of coal dust." And he'd walk up to me, get a match out of his pocket, and he'd hold her eye open, and he'd, not the lighting end of the match, the other end, he'd go flick and flick the bit of coal dust out of her eye. I regularly saw him do that for people around your lot.
That was Peter Gray, Lucy Bathurst and Donald talking about Dr. Andrew, whose medical equipment and personal belongings are in the relocated Yallourn House at Old Gippstown. Dr. Andrew worked at the Yallourn Health Service and Hospital, which provided services to brown coal mine and power station workers and their families. Alan McLennan was a nurse at the hospital. She told me about completing training at the Alfred Hospital in inner city Melbourne and then moving to Yallourn, where nurses had greater responsibilities.
was different because you were trained and there were no, you did everything. It was completely different to working at the Alfred. You were responsible for the patients that you were in your care. There were, during the day, there would be four nurses on, and nurses were rather scarce in those days, and not all nurses were fully trained. And some of the semi-trained ones were doing exactly the same work as the trained ones.
Margaret also spoke about the responsibilities given to nurses. As a nurse, she faced serious medical situations, including workplace accidents, sometimes with patients she knew well. But the nurses were always professional, only breaking down in the staff room, away from patients and their visitors.
You are very compassionate, but you've got to get on with your job. And the job was sort of, you know, saving a life or a soul and making sure that you looked after the person as well as you could.
Jan Smith, growing up in Yallourn, recalls going to the Presbyterian Church. Dick Francis, an overseer of 30 gardeners, speaks about the decision to form a nursery. And Steve Mays, a barber, recalls a funny incident at his shop.
I always had to go into church and always had to have a hat on. So in the winter, I can remember one very beautiful dusky pink bowler hat I had, and I had a matching overcoat. And that was my Sunday best to wear to church. We used to go to shopping in the city, a special day every year, to get our new outfits for going to church and Sunday school.
People should have their gardens changed. So that's how the nursery came about. And they found out I was there, and so I eventually became the overseer there. And I had a foreman, and at one stage I had 30-odd gardeners, tractor drivers, drivers, and all of the things that made Yallourn what it is.
I remember a story about one of the painters coming through the back door and his boss coming through the front door. And his boss said to the painter, "Well, you know, what are you doing getting a haircut? This, you know, it's working hours." And he said to him, he said to his boss, "Well, it grows in the boss's time." And the boss said to him, "Well, it doesn't all grow in the boss's time." And with that, the painter turned around and said, "Yeah, but I'm not getting all of it cut off." True story.
Bob Garvin, a Yallourn resident, recalls the Yallourn bushfire in 1944. Keith Cook tells of the mine collapse near the township of Yallourn North, formerly the Brown Coal Mine town, in 1952. And Stelvio, Steve Loverson, who, like Keith, had also lived in the Brown Coal Mine town, recounts the Great Flood in 1934.
Yes, it threatened the town, and we were kept, I was in the primary school at that stage, and my sister was up at the high school. I remember she came down to collect me, and she told the teacher that we were sort of in the fire area, so she would take me home to my mum. But on getting home, we had to clutch the fence along the way because it was so thick, the black smoke, you couldn't see. And I know I was frightened, and sort of going on, but Chris sort of got in control and sort of talked me into, "Just hold on to the fence, we'll get home."
So when the cut fell in here, slipped in, it was right on the edge of it, so it had to move. And early 52, I think it was. From the edge of where the bakehouse and the post office was, it just slipped straight down. And the coal was on a clay seam, sitting on coal, the coal sitting on the clay seam, and there was movement. And when it, but the, That upset quite a few, I think, at this stage, because it virtually was from the end of the old main street and round.
I remember walking to the hill up from the river, right up to the top there, and watching the floods come in. And my father was afternoon shift that day, and the flood had come across the old Latrobe Bridge, which is the old brown coal mine, the first one. And he walked, waded across the water, he and another chap, to go to work. But when he got across the work, the mine was, the open cut was flooded. So I don't know where they were. Anyhow, they built them up in the West Camp. And my dad was away for four or five days before the flood had gone down enough for him to come home.
Ruth Hibbert, a child growing up at the old brown coal township, Bob Garvin and Stelvio Steve Loverson all recall facts about how your lawn operated during World War II.
The other exciting thing that happened here, of course, in Brown Coal Mine was that when the war broke out, there was a big army camp here built on the hill with their guns pointed to the power station in case an enemy flyer came over. And the planes would come and patrol from the Sale Air Base.
Yes, yes. I suppose some of the things that we had that remind us of the war was going, we had blackout curtains put up in the houses. Cars had little slits put over the headlights so that they wouldn't show much light. We had concrete block walls around the shop glass windows. What else did we have? Oh, we had searchlights both at Yalorn North and at Yalorn. We also had some aircraft guns.
When I first started there, I was working down the open cut just waiting for apprenticeship, and when the air raid siren came, everybody raced out of the offices, went down the steps, and they had tunnels under the coal, and that's where we used to go. No rails, we're all sort of air wardens. Everybody grabbed this and grabbed that and what was necessary to take in case something came. It was just everybody went underground till it was all clear.
Emil migrated from the Ukraine in 1949 and lived at Yalorn North. Olga Dunn, also from the Ukraine, moved to Yalorn North as well. They both recall their experiences as migrants.
Because in the street where we were, so we had White Russian, well, Belarus they call them now. We had Belarus, we had Germans, we had Serbians, Croatians, Polish, and Maltese. And you'd have to go all the way down the other end of Kelso Road before you found some Aussies.
When I went to school, I could say, oh, well, he's Ukrainian, or he's, you know, German, or he's Yugoslav, you know, by the names and all their food and, you know, the different clothes and accents. I loved all that sort of stuff, you know. Really, really liked it. It was like Little Europe. That's how I used to call it, Little Europe.
Welcome back to your lawn.
Today, all that remains of the old hospital and the township of Yalorn is an open-cut coal mine. Graham explained what happened.
The town was on the demolition list, at the beginning of the 70s. The SEC really wanted to divest themselves of the town. We went along with it. I mean, we had no active involvement with that process, but the SEC's said they wanted the 15 million odd tons underneath a brown coal immediately underneath the town. That was their sole argument. Plus, the town was always a temporary town, was the argument coming from management.
I also spoke with Bruce King, a superintendent in charge of operations that involved the removal of Yallourn. He explained the process of removing the much beloved town.
The first place that really would have been sort of on the demolish list was the Yallourn Golf Club, which was way on the south side of the town, and then the Yallourn Hospital. So, and then as it sort of came round, of course, all the sporting ovals went. They were all on the south side of the town, and the swimming pool. And then we actually sort of started to move into the actual residential area. And the churches, they all started to be demolished. But it was, you know, it didn't happen overnight. It was years to go right through this whole area. And I think there was, 1,000 homes in Yallourn from memory, thereabouts.
The township of Yallourn was a beautiful company-built town. It was an architecturally designed garden city with landscaped streets and parks and well-planned housing, plus first-class community amenities. It was owned by the State Electricity Commission and designed to provide the best possible conditions, thus ensuring a happy and loyal workforce.
It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, that the centre of Yallourn was, as you would imagine, a centre would be of a small town, and it was, you know, and around the you know, green gardens and water fountains and so on. You've got libraries and you've got medical facilities, a Kernot Hall, you've got banks and theatres. I mean, you've probably seen photos of these things, but it was fantastic and it was terrific. And then you go down into the gardens. If they could have just hung on for another 3, 4, or 5 years, we didn't have people who called themselves environmentalists in those days, I don't think, but if they could have hung on a little bit longer and found a reason why they did not actually have to demolish and destroy the town, it would still be there and it would still be a terrific town.
The removal of this company town caused a lot of distress and upheaval for the residents of Yallourn. Here is Steve Mays talking about the experience.
Yeah, obviously there was a lot of hurt in the community because a lot of people had brought their families up there and families up there, and obviously the Yallourn Township, as most country towns do, create a culture, and I think a lot of people at that stage thought even though the heart was being ripped out of the town, it was being ripped out of their lives too, and there was a lot of feeling about the closure of the Yallourn Township, a lot of feeling.
If it was home or the place where you were born, sincerely welcome back to Yallourn.
Today the people of Yallourn hold on to their precious memories of the SEC company-built town. The State Electricity Commission was privatised in the second half of the 1990s, and the current Yallourn Power Station is slated for closure in 2032. But the residents of Yallourn also have precious items which remind them of the workers' town. This includes the collection of Dr. Andrew and his family, which serves as a reminder of the first medical practitioner in the town. The collection is stored in a house that is not the original Andrew home, but is a relocated house from Yallourn. Let's close with Lucy Bathurst's story about one of her mementos.
And it was so sad to see it all go. And when it did go, when our house did go, a friend of mine, we went there to have a look where it was all taken down. And my dad used to always say when I was a child, we can never own a brick of this house because it's built on coal and it will go. And I grew up knowing that. And this day, this friend of mine, we went back to see where the house was, and there was a brick lying there, and it had a Yolande imprinted on it. And she picked it up and she said, "Here's your brick. Well, you've got a brick of the house." So that was lovely to keep. And our daughters have it now. That one of our daughters has that brick now.
Welcome back to your lawn. May a smile or a word bring your memory delight. Welcome back to your lawn. Special town, special job, giving power and light. When you see...
This has been Julie Fenley sharing the stories of power industry workers and their families. The Gippstown Reserve Committee of Management gratefully acknowledges the support of the Foundation for Rural and Regional Renewal for making this project possible, with support from Libby Scott and Nori Nation. Many thanks also to Jesse Nation for editing and sound. And thanks to the people of Yolande for sharing their stories. To learn more, please go to the Old Gippstown website. This audio recording is the copyright of Old Gippstown Reserve Committee of Management.
If it was home or the place where you were born, sincerely.